The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 401. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, this edition is going to chronicle my trip to CXC, the Cartoon Crossroads Columbus, which I know episode 398, Ben and Craig, the co-chairs of the programming committee, spoke to me about this year's event. And so this installment is going to be kind of about my experience and kind of the wrap-up of that event that was held from September 27th till October 1st. I went down September 30th and went to the downtown library, and that is where, like, all the vendors were there. And so I got to meet a lot of cool new people, which I'm going to talk about those conversations and those folks here in a few minutes. But I also got to see some old pals, you know, Brian Canini, Steve Steiner, Tom Williams, Bob Corby, Gib Bickle, Michael Nino. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. I hope I'm not, but I probably am forgetting somebody. And if so, I apologize. But it was cool. It was a great experience. The place was packed. That library was just filled to the gills with people enjoying independent comics, enjoying cartooning, enjoying animation, enjoying artwork. And you know what? I would be remiss if I didn't mention that they were adding to the local economy because they were buying books, as did I. I picked up some really cool stuff. And of course, not only did I buy some stuff, not only did I see old friends, but as I mentioned, I made some new friends. I spoke to quite a few creators down there. Whitney Wasson, O'Kell Lee, Jamie Jones, Chad Bilyeu, Casey Van Heel, and Bruce Crislip, which Bruce, an amazing individual that has been at the forefront of the underground comics revolution back in the late 60s, early 70s. I actually met him while he was at his table right next to Michael Nino, and he had told me that he had never been on a podcast ever before, and he just wanted to be on one so badly. Like, not only is he a legend, but I could not walk away, right? Like, I had to give the man what he wanted, which is to be on a podcast, and so I'm very happy to do that for Bruce. He and I talk a lot about his book, The Mini Comics Revolution, 1969 to 1989, and he shares a lot of cool stories. So that's going to be the back half of my conversation. You're going to hear the other ones are a little bit shorter at the front end, but I need to thank my great sponsor before I get to these conversations. And of course, I'm referring to World's Greatest Comics. As I say all the time, World's Greatest Comics has everything you need for your comic book fandom. They got single issues, they got graphic novels, they've got collections, they've got hundreds and hundreds of back issues, they've got toys, they've got collectibles, comic book supplies. I mean, you name it, they got it. And heck, even if they don't have it, I'm pretty damn certain that Jeff will try to get it for you. So you need to check out the store, especially if you're in Central Ohio. The store's located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address. And you can even find them on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And I would like to thank once again the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics for being a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. Well, now that that little bit of business is out of the way and done with, it's time for me to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear all of my conversations from CXC. All All right, folks, I'm standing here at CXC with Okel Lee. Okel, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man.
How's the convention treating you right now?
It's actually pretty great. I wasn't expecting to be doing so well and seeing so many people. But yeah, like it's phenomenal. This is my first one soloing, so I'm pretty happy with the turnout.
Well, let's talk about one of your projects. One that caught my eye that I thought was just visually just so unique. Let's talk about Johnny Arcade. Can you give a brief summary to the listeners about what that project's all about?
I don't know. There's nothing brief about Johnny Arcade, to be honest, but it's a project that has been ongoing for years, just like kind of like within the city. My buddy Staven Curry fabricated the idea like years ago, and it's been involved with like many artists, and I've kind of been just like taking it, putting my own spin on it, and just collaborating with Staven on the story. But yeah, Johnny is just like a crazy character that comes out of an arcade and just like is born out of chaos. It's pretty wild.
What's the inspiration for the tale?
The inspiration comes from mainly Staven's voice.
Really?
Yeah, just the energy that guy carries. Living in Columbus, like having been in the city and just like the environments that we find ourselves in and just like ways to make it fun.
You told me that you bounced around a little bit after you graduated from CCAD.
Yeah.
Why'd you come back to Columbus? What was the was there motivation because of the art community that's here, or what was your decision?
I mean, you nailed it right there. Like the art community, the family that I kind of like created, just coming out of CCAD. My like lifelong friends were made there, and still even now, like I'm tabling right next to my buddy Alec Valeris, who's like one of the greatest illustrators I know. So like it's just like always full circle, but. Truly, I got offered a job opportunity at Wexner Center for the Arts, which I'm currently working at right now, back in 2018, and I couldn't pass up the offer. So,
let's talk about another project that you were involved with. Let's talk about Super Spreader.
Super Spreader is also, you know, out of the mind of like Staven Curry, Taylor Chu, Mike Wright. Those guys are like always hooking up some schemes. This is the second project that they actually released this year, and I was able to throw my two cents in. So I got a two-page spread in there called Frankendamned, or King Midas as Bizarro. It's pretty wild, but yeah, that one's just poetry, illustration, photography, everything you could want.
So no doubt you are a fan of comics. So do you have a favorite creator or writer that you really dig?
To be honest, no. I don't have a favorite. It's just when I see my friends making stuff, it's truly like that's the inspiration there.
Okay.
Like people are always like comic heads, like talking about like this guy, like whoever. But it's always like so exciting for me to see like the new things that people around me are creating, because like I feel like I know the best artists in the world.
Any upcoming projects you'd like to talk about?
It's Johnny Arcade all the time, all day.
Well, that's up to issue, what, 3?
Yeah, we're working on issue 3 right now.
Okay, yep. Cool. Yep. So there's going to be plenty more tales of Johnny Arcade.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yep. Let's plug some websites, social media, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, me currently is panthersparadise.com. Panthersparadise.com. You got Third Mind Comics. Wexner Center for the Arts. That's just... You know, we're always doing stuff. We had Daniel Klaus there last night. Yeah, it's all those places. Columbus in general is just like a great art hub.
All right. Okel, thanks, man. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. So I stopped by the table of Whitney Wasson. How are you?
I'm fine. Happy, a little overwhelmed.
Well, you had said that, you know, this is your first time here at CXC. You didn't know what to expect.
Absolutely, and it's everybody's delivered, all the tables are beautiful, everybody's interesting. I think I'm going to spend all the money that I've made.
Well, take it from somebody who's been here many, many years, that happens all the time, so you won't be in the minority. But let's talk a little bit about a couple of your projects. The Sober Rabbit, can you let the listeners know a brief summary without giving away too much?
Yeah, sure. So I started Sober Rabbit as a webcomic in 2019. And I started it to sort of blow off steam about being newly sober. I was joining 12 subgroups. I was going to therapy the first time. I was really kind of getting my shit together. And I didn't see much of that represented in the media. Normally, recovery stories are somebody has a hard time and then immediately they're better. And recovery is not linear and it's messy. And once you stop drugs and alcohol, you still have to deal with your mental health. So Rabbit is just sort of figuring it out. Rabbit has a friend named Brenda, who's a very anxious pigeon with an eating disorder. And so they're just sort of trying to find their bearings in the world. It's a loosely autobio comic, so a lot of it does come from my life, but some of it's fiction as well. It's funny, it's dark, it's drawn in a really simple style. I'm a self-taught artist, so I'm just kind of figuring it out as I go along, just like my characters.
How's the feedback been with the book?
People are really kind. I think that people in recovery are looking for representation, as well as queer, non-binary, trans people. I write a lot about sexuality and gender, so I think that people see themselves in my comic in a way that's exciting. I didn't know if anyone would relate, and it turns out a lot of people do, so it's exciting.
Can you talk a little bit about Shelby the Squirrel? Is that kind of along the same lines as Sober Rabbit, or is it something totally different?
Yeah, Shelby is in 12-step meetings with Rabbit, and so this Shelby number one is my first spinoff character from the original series. So this is a comic set in the past. It's Shelby figuring out how to sponsor a newly sober person who comes into their life in kind of a dramatic way. And the next issue will be coming out probably next month or the month after, and it will continue the story. So.
Okay, cool. So can I ask, obviously this is deeply personal for you, but what were some of the other inspirations you had when you're creating your book? Like, were there favorite authors or creators or whatnot?
Yeah, so I have a couple of small mini comics out now. How to Be Sober and my anxiety workbook are both just sort of about how, you know, you feel like you've got a handle on one thing and then you try something else and totally fail and flounder. So I'm inspired by authors who are really brutally honest. I love Linda Barry. I love clearly Simon Hanselman talking about substance use and how mental health is constantly an issue for all of their characters. I also really like Noah Van Siver, who's here, who draws in a very simple style. No frills, but it's also beautiful. So I'm kind of striving to have a balance of emotional and funny and moving, but then also, you know, all the stuff that you want in comics of clear images, memorable characters, that sort of thing. So I've got a couple of small books out, and my latest one is called How to Be Sad, and it's about grief and grieving. And they all sort of follow the same thing of being honest and funny and talking about stuff that's pretty uncomfortable usually.
Speaking of uncomfortable, is there a piece of advice you could give somebody that either is dealing with somebody that they love that's in recovery or somebody themselves that are in recovery? Is there one bit of advice you would give them?
Sure. Well, I've been sober for 7 years, so it's pretty new to me too. But at the same time, you know, keep it simple is something somebody told me. I think that you have to deal with things in the order that they're killing you.
Okay.
So if it's getting sober first and then dealing with your mental health, that's great. If it's dealing with your mental health and then realizing that maybe you don't have a great relationship with drugs and alcohol, you know, maybe you start with that. But I didn't ever think that I would get sober, and now I have 7 years. So to anybody who's struggling, you know, one day at a time.
So where can folks find you on the internet if they wanted to read up about you, to get your comics, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm all over the internet. You can find everything at SoberRabbit.com. I post the most on Instagram, which is SoberRabbit, and then Facebook is SoberRabbitComic. And I think I'll have a TikTok soon, but we'll see about that.
Okay. All right, Whitney, well, thank you very much for taking a few minutes out of your time to talk to me here at CXC.
Thank you. Have fun.
I shall. Maybe I will spend as much money as you. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
All right, thank you. All right, folks, I am standing here at CXC with Jamie Jones. Jamie, how you doing, man?
It's great. This show has been amazing.
You said that. I you know, kind of did a little loop or lap, if you will, around the tables, and I talked to you just, I don't know, half hour or so ago, and you said you were doing great here, you had a blast so far, and that's continued.
Any kind of show where you get to see original art from, like, the early 1900s, I'm down. I'm in. I got to see a Mutt and Jeff original yesterday.
Oh. So you're talking about you went to the Billy.
All right. I went to the Billy, yeah.
Did you get the BTS, the behind-the-scenes look?
I did.
Oh, is that not crazy?
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's like tempers the entire expectation. Like, you go in and you're, I don't know, there's so much.
No,
I'm a big old strip guy.
Okay.
So getting to see that stuff.
I totally agree, because I got the opportunity, August, to go and take the behind-the-scenes tour. And again, like, when I got done, I went and was talking to some friends. I'm like, I don't really think that you understand what I saw today.
Yeah.
You know, it's some amazing stuff.
I got to see an original Eisner, original Spirit stuff. I'm a big Milton Caniff, Terry and the Pirates guy. Got to see some big, Sunday Page, Terry and the Pirates stuff. So.
Yeah, and it's fascinating when you learn about what the hoops they had to jump through. Like, for me, the two different sizes that they had to make, I was like, wow, that just makes me even more appreciative of that stuff.
Sure. Yeah, you know? The level of craft involved on that level is insane.
Well, let's talk about your craft.
Okay.
That was a great segue, wasn't it?
That was great. You do this professionally?
So let's talk about your comics that you have here, The Baboon. Let's start with that one. What can you tell the folks at home about the project without giving away too much?
Great. The Baboon is my love letter to pulp action-adventure comics of the 40s and 50s. So Spirit, Terry and the Pirates, Steve Canyon, that kind of stuff. So that's why I got so excited about seeing that thing. It is a freelance adventurer going on different adventures with his crew and orphaned nephew. You know, stereotypical pulp stuff.
Yeah, you got to have the nephew, you know, or a kid as a sidekick because, you know, that makes you go, why is there a child being placed in danger?
Yes.
But that's what makes it fun.
It's exactly what makes it fun. Yeah, so I'm playing on a lot of the tropes, updating them for a modern audience.
Okay.
And that's The Baboon.
All right.
Self-contained stories of adventure.
What about Tales of MFR?
Tales of MFR stands for Monkeys Fighting Robots. It was there's a comic book review site, Monkeys Fighting Robots, of the same name, and I did a weekly comic strip for them for 3 years. So we did 104 strips, and this collection is all of that.
And you said, with Monkeys Fighting Robots, that you can not only just rely on monkeys and robots, but there's zombies, there's other creatures.
There's zombie robots, there's zombie
monkeys.
Is there a
kaiju?
There is.
Oh, all right.
There's everything. There's a Voltron type thing.
Well.
Yeah, we really hit every kind of mark.
See, folks, you have to now get this book. I mean, it's got everything. Monkeys, robots, kaiju, Voltron.
Fighting.
Yeah. So, do you have any upcoming projects on the docket?
I have been doing, for the past year, I've been doing a Baboon daily comic strip.
Oh, cool.
And I run that through my Substack. And we are about, this week hits 100. So I'm about to hit 100 strips, which is exciting. And then I guess most recently I did a book that came out a couple months ago for the state of Florida. I did an educational comic for digital information technologies, which can be found on the USF Commons.
Okay.
So
cool. All right, well, Jamie, where can folks follow you online, social media, et cetera, et cetera?
I am Art of Jamie Jones on everything.
Okay.
And my website is bowtie.press.
Okay, which, snazzy bow tie. I like that. And I'm envious because you actually tied that.
Oh, yeah.
The ones I have are clip-on. But anyways, Jamie, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
All right, folks, I am standing here at CXC with Chad Bilyeu. Chad, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Just out here selling comics, you know.
Yeah, well, let's talk about your comics. Let's talk about Amsterdam, The Re-Up, your two books that you have here at the show.
Yeah, cool. My first one is Chad in Amsterdam. It's about my life being an American, a Clevelander, living in Amsterdam. I write everything, work with an international array of artists to bring the stories to fruition. It's dope. Award-winning. Good reviews. I'm real proud of it. It's actually getting compiled into a hardcover this fall by a Dutch publisher called Scratch Books. And then my new project is Re-Up, and that's a graphic novel in progress. I'm talking about how I used to sell weed in D.C. back when weed was illegal and exciting.
Well, let's talk, if you don't mind. You know, prior to recording, you were very open about, you know, your past and that. What may be a misconception that the general public has about dealing weed?
Well, like, it's funny because weed is so legal or
now,
decriminalized now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess the one thing that people don't understand, out of, like, every drug, I think weed is the most innocuous of all of them, even alcohol. But it is the hardest to sell and transport because of the smell. So it's, you have to be crafty with that. And people think, oh, it's not a big deal. But at the time when I was doing it, I mean, you would have went to a federal prison and, you know, it's like selling coke or heroin or anything else at the time. So it's a lot of risk in it. And it's not so much what you're selling, it's the fact that you're selling something illegal. So there's a lot of stress in being aware, and it's a very methodological process, you know what I'm saying? So you got to be aware, and it's a set of rules and a regiment that you have to follow, because as soon as one slip up, as they said in The Wire, one slip up and you're done, you know?
Okay. When I saw the re-up, I'm like, I immediately went to The Wire.
Right, right.
So, did you ever face any danger in your activities?
I mean, a little danger. Like, you know, that I was very elusive, so people didn't know where I lived. And as soon as I let one guy know where I lived, I got robbed.
Okay.
You know, so that. But not so much. Maybe some threats that luckily didn't pan out. It was always a threat from police. And I had a close call once, but thanks to the incompetence of the D.C. Metro Police, I didn't get caught. So, hey, thanks you guys for being fucking incompetent. I appreciate y'all.
How'd you end up in Amsterdam?
I studied. Well, I used to visit a lot when I was in D.C. selling weed, had a lot of money. So I would go to Amsterdam, chill out, and buy weed legally.
Well, and then the thing that we talked about, too, off air, was that there's kind of a stereotype for Amsterdam that you said isn't 100% true.
Well, people think in Amsterdam you can do whatever and it's fun, and it's just, it's not true. The Dutch are far more conservative than you would believe them to be. The weed and prostitution is really just, I feel it's a facet of Dutch pragmatism. And they're like, why would we make this illegal if we can make good money from it?
Okay.
And also, if it's something that isn't so harmful, let's just monitor it. Weed's actually decriminalized. It's not legal over there. That's good to know. But you can do things. They're like, it's not a big deal. It's weed, which I think is nice. You know, it kind of shows a certain pragmatic side. But in Dutch society, there's lots of rules. And they want you to follow all these rules. And if you don't, there are consequences to pay, usually in the form of a fine.
Are you ever coming back to the States? I mean, permanently. I mean, obviously you're here. Obviously you're here now. But I mean, are any gumption to come back?
Well, you know, me and my wife are actually looking for a house.
Okay.
In Pittsburgh, we're considering Pittsburgh. It's close to Cleveland, where I'm from. I like Pittsburgh a lot. And I mean, I guess I would be in between, but I love the States, it's home. But I like being over there now too, and I just got my passport, so I can really move wherever in the EU I want to move. So I'll probably have a foot in both. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any upcoming projects? We kind of deviated a little bit from your books, but what do you got coming up?
I got, firstly, the hardcover version of Chad in Amsterdam is coming out from Scratch Books. It's got all the first 6 issues, including my sold-out first issue. It's going to look beautiful. It's a great, great project. And then me and Juliette DeVitt are working on the re-up. That's a graphic novel and project in process. So there'll be a lot more issues of that. We're real proud of it. We think it's a fantastic comic. And reviews been good. Sales been good. Number one's almost sold out. So we're just going to keep at it. And that's what I'm doing right now. And after I get done with these 6 more issues of Chad in Amsterdam, and then I'm done with Autobio, I'll move on to other stuff.
Where can folks follow you on the internet, social media, etc.?
Yo, just Google Chad in Amsterdam. I pop up everywhere.
Cool.
Cool.
Chad, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as usually happens at a convention, I run into a fellow wrestling fan, and here I am.
Yeah.
Casey Van Heel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's talk about it. Palooka, it is a wrestling-themed comic, which is right up my alley, so let's let the folks at home know what this great comic is all about.
Well, with a name like Van Heel, it's inevitable, so... So Palooka is the story of Morty Q. Suggs. He's just a jobber wrestler, lifelong heel. He spent his career getting spit on, screamed at, booed, and he's kind of sick of it. He's had his fill of that lifestyle. So in this 60s New York City, there are actual superheroes. And the leader of the Saviors of the City is the Mighty American, who's Morty's idol. So when he gets the chance through a backdoor deal to get bootleg superpowers, he sees it as a way to finally become a babyface, finally get the accolades of the people of New York City. But sadly, what he finds out, the world of superheroes is pretty much just like wrestling. It's kayfabe, it's fixed, and he's once again stuck being the bad guy.
Was Morty ever stabbed, by the way, when he was a heel?
By the littlest old lady you've ever met in your life.
Nice! Awesome. Authentic to a T.
Just a hat pin to the shoulder.
Well, what was the inspiration for this tale?
Well, this for me was just childhood growing up with wrestling, and I loved it so much. And it was doing cons, and I was just talking with artists, and I found this artist who just had these great, like, Randy the Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, like, just pinups and art. And I was just got my brain going, like, what if I want to do a wrestling comic, but I don't know how to do a wrestling comic. And it kind of just started down the road, and it was just my love of the heels baby faces and then classic heroes villains, just the duality of it. So if you have a Soviet Russian heel, you need the most American baby face in the world. And that kind of started to click, and I was like, that's just like old comics. Like, if you have an evil cowboy, you need
a Native American who's going to come and save the day. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of where it started, and then it was just going down the rabbit hole of wrestling podcasts, wrestling books, getting all the vernacular and all that history from that early era.
Cool. Let's talk about Knights of the Fifth Dimension, which is, it looks like an amazingly crazy book, if I may say that.
it definitely was a labor of love. It has a lot of inspirations, and we tried to cover the spread. But the premise is the Knights of the Fifth Dimension is an actual comic book in this world from the 1970s. That's kind of seen the end of its time. It's been surpassed by the mega corporations like Marvel, DC. This still has that old crusty feel of the dollar bin or the, you know, discount section of the comic store. So the creator of it reaches out to his old protege to say, we have to finish the story. And he's had his fill of the comics world. He doesn't want to go back into it. But what he is told and he sees through a very psychedelic spell is that those stories actually protect the higher dimension, the fifth dimension. So he needs to finish the story to protect us from Vanta Black, the primordial darkness.
That is a pretty trippy summary. And you do mention that, you know, one of the inspirations is Jack Kirby and some of his tales, as we know, a little bit trippy as well.
Yeah, it's definitely taken from that cosmic comic. We have all the Kirby crackle you could ever want. Thick, chunky lines, ugly villains, broad-shouldered heroes. It's definitely a love letter to him in that 60s, 70s comics.
All right, let's talk about The Civil Four, which is a historical fiction comic. So tell the folks at home a little bit about it.
Well, Civil Four, basic premise is Abe Lincoln survives the assassination at Ford's Theater. And that skews the world into a more bombastic, strange place in which he forms the Civil Four, which is himself, Harriet Tubman, Johnny Appleseed, and U.S. Grant to solve the mystery of who is actually behind the assassination. And they find out there's a mysterious dark wizard called the Dandy who leads an evil group called the Foundation. And they have metallic automatons that we call the Klangsmen who look just like the evil Klansmen, but they're steam-powered.
All right, let's maybe take a look at the last couple of books here. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but talk about the Super Rich Season 1.
Super Rich is kind of just taken from the modern era. It's like in a world where the government could fund and finance a Captain America, a super soldier, they would probably quit after one go. And that's the premise. They create a Captain America, he dies, and they can't afford to spend any more money on it. So that technology is picked up by the only people who could afford it, and that would be the fabulously wealthy, influential celebrities of the modern era.
It looks like it's a little bit more child-centered or age-appropriate for children. Would that be accurate or no?
I would say, like, teens.
Okay, it's teens,
like,
okay.
It's got ribald humor. It gets a little...
Okay.
They're flawed characters, so the... but, yeah, they get the formula and it locks abilities in each of them, but the abilities tend to be that sort of monkey paw-ish ability.
Mm.
Like, the egotistical actor, his ability is he just gets a dog face... and dog senses. The air-brained influencer, she is able to turn into a noxious gas and back to
nice.
Solid form.
Okay.
And then the hot-headed athlete, anytime he calms down and finds his center, he's able to turn into a hyper-intelligent, super-strong scientist, basically.
Okay. What about star, comma, man, period? Did I say that correctly or no?
Oh, yeah. It's star, man, it's just a one issue, it's like Looney, like a Tex Avery strip, basically.
Oh, okay.
It's a silent comic, so there's like three balloons of dialogue in it, and our analog for Elvis is named Levis. He runs afoul of the mafia, so they take him to the desert to bury him, and a UFO crashes. So
okay.
Elvis versus the mafia versus aliens.
All right, real quick, last question. Favorite wrestlers?
Favorite wrestlers, gotta say Undertaker for sure as a kid, Macho Man, who else? I'm trying to think of someone more recent. John Moxley, I like John Moxley.
Okay, okay. All right, where can folks find you on the internet and social media and whatnot?
PersonOfMeritComics.com is the website, and then you can find me on Instagram as PersonOfMerit.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate awesome. It, Casey.
Thank you.
I'm going to interrupt my conversations here for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Basically, they got your fandom covered. So, if you're in the area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for WG Comics.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down with Bruce Chrislip here at CXC at the Downtown Library in Columbus, Ohio. Bruce, how are you?
I'm fine.
You are a quite a talented individual, and you have a lot of stuff to talk about. But let's start with the mini comics book that you wrote called The Mini Comics Revolution, 1969 to 1989, which you have here in your hands. I marvel at the fact that this was all done by you.
Well, I had help in the production and design.
Okay.
Thank goodness I did. But I did put this together over 10 years, researching, writing, rewriting. I picked all the photos that are in here, and there are many, because it's a 467-page book, which unfortunately is now out of print.
Really?
But if there's an enterprising publisher out there listening to this, maybe we can swing a deal, go back to print.
Okay.
Yeah, but this covers the mini comics that were inspired by underground comics.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
This sort of covers the years 1969 to 1989, 21 year time period.
And during that time, you were out on the West Coast, correct? You were in, was it Portland, Oregon, or
I was in Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah, it all ties in here. I submitted this book to a few academic presses, and it kind of threw them because I combined mini comics history with some memoir of my life in comics, because it is all tied in together.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the original mini comics artists in the 1970s. At the time, there were not more than maybe 30 or at most 40 of us throughout the whole country. And I was one of that 40.
What's maybe one or two or maybe even three of your most vivid memories from this time period?
Well, I'll tell you, the main thing I like to say is it's surprising how many people started in mini comics
mm-hmm.
and later mm-hmm. became quite successful.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Groening, who later mm-hmm. went on to create The Simpsons,
yes.
did mini comics
yes.
in the early days. Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman,
mm-hmm.
who created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
mm-hmm.
also started in mini comics. Jim Valentino, mm-hmm. one of the founders of Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
I mean, Art Spiegelman, too?
Well, in 1972, an artist named Justin Green mm-hmm. was living out in the Bay Area. Justin Green is known as the father of the autobiographic comic.
Okay.
Because he wrote a comic that was very influential called Binky Brown Meets the Holy Virgin Mary. All about... this Binky Brown is a stand-in for Justin Green, and the book is all about his tortured Catholic upbringing.
Okay. And that set the precedence for other creators
Yes, Art Spiegelman has said there would not be a mouse without this book.
Okay.
But anyway, Justin sort of got tired of being part of the comic scene because it was a little too close-knit. They all lived in maybe a few streets in San Francisco at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Art Spiegelman was out there, Bill Griffith, Jay Kinney, I mean, there is Trina Robbins, the list goes on and on, all of the main underground cartoons, Robert Crumb, they're all there. And so to break away from the herd, the way Justin Green explained it to me, his mother was Catholic, his father was Jewish. He was brought up Catholic, but, you know, he always felt like an outsider. He never knew where he belonged.
He
used his outsider status and started doing his own mini-comics, which he took to a comic shop owner called Gary Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Arlington published it. This is starting in 72 and then into 73. And all of a sudden, all the other underground cartoonists living in town wanted to do underground mini-comics. So there were a whole series, mm-hmm. maybe about 15 to 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of started the rest of us. There was a guy out also in Berkeley named Clay Geertes, who had a little publication called Comics World. Geertes Comics World. He popularized the minis and the undergrounds, and pretty soon all these people, about 10 years younger than the underground cartoonists, you know, Carol Tyler refers to us as the underground cartoonist kid brothers. So that, you know, we were born in the mid-50s, whereas the underground cartoonists were all born around the mid-40s. We were inspired to do our own mini comics starting in the 70s, mid-70s, late 70s. There was a real scene, but it was like, again, I say 30 to 40 people. That was it, you know. And now comics festivals are held all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Mini comics are still with us, mm-hmm. even with, you know, the online world and web comics. Well, you know, printed mini comics, I'm happy to say, are still out there.
What is maybe one of the projects you've worked on? I mean, you can include your book, but I was looking at some of your artwork and whatnot.
Well, I, back in 1990, I hate to say this because it's 40 years ago. In 1993 and 1994, I had my own solo comic called Paper Tales. And critically well-received, but it got lost with the hundreds or maybe thousands of other titles that were out there at the time.
So that's your most prized possession of what you've produced?
Yeah, I would say this was where I would, you know, where I was not just doing a few pages in somebody else's comic.
Okay.
I was, you know, yeah, it's my own thing, you know, it's my own comic. The greatest compliment I ever got is there's a cartoonist named James Kolchalka who started out doing comics. Now he's been quite successful in children's books.
Mm.
With titles like Peanut Butter and Jeremy, well, there's a whole bunch, Johnny Boo. Anyway, I met him at a small press comics festival, and he told me when he was starting to get into comics, he looked at my Paper Tales, among others, as, you know, to get some ideas of the way to proceed. You know, so this is my first meeting, and he told me I had been a bit of an influence on him, which was always nice to hear.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what would you say would be the biggest piece of advice you would give somebody that comes to you and says, Bruce, I want to start my own a comic, but I don't know how to start it. What would be your piece of advice?
Well, nowadays, you have to be part of the online world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the money to print, there are, you know, ways to go to print. There's Kickstarter. There's mm-hmm. all sorts of different crowdfunding vehicles. You know, I definitely look into that, you know. And I would say, don't despair. One of the big guests this weekend is Raina Telgemeier,
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, the queen of young adult graphic novels.
Yeah, absolutely.
She appeared in Columbus here in 2005 at a small press comic show called Space,
mm-hmm.
doing photocopied comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can add her to the list mm-hmm. of self-publishing small press comics, along with Matt Groening, along with Linda Barry,
mm-hmm.
you know, along with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle creators.
Yeah.
I always say, and I used to teach a class in Seattle on comics,
mm-hmm.
The most important thing is getting your work seen.
Okay. Well, let me ask real quick, just you mentioned Kickstarter and that.
Yeah.
What side of the room do you, so to speak, do you fall upon when you talk about technology? Do you believe it's absolutely necessary, or do you believe it's maybe somewhat necessary? What do you think?
I think it's available. It's a tool to help you take advantage of it.
Okay.
You know, I'm an old guy now. I mean, I was born in the mid-1950s, so I'm a comics dinosaur. I was there for... Well, geez, this sort of astounded me, but it's true. I attended my first comic book convention 50 years ago.
Wow.
In 1973.
Wow. Was that in Seattle?
That was in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, Cleveland, Ohio. Okay.
Very quickly, I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay.
Later in my high school years, I sort of set comic books aside for a while and started acting like a normal high school student, you know, dating girls and mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But I got to college. I went to college the same town I lived in or near, Youngstown, Ohio, Youngstown State University. And through a number of circumstances, I met a few other comic book nuts. We started a comic book club. We started putting on comic book conventions.
Okay.
The first time out, the student council, this is 1975, the student council gave us $1,000 to play with to put on a comic book convention.
Wow.
So at the time, there was... You know, you didn't really have video.
Mm-hmm.
We rented movies on 16 millimeter from film rental companies. But we had some extra money to play with, so we brought in some artists from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it turned out there were several artists that lived in and near Youngstown that worked for Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. There were three of these.
Mm-hmm.
I want to quickly mention this because I think this is vitally important. There was an artist named Dan Adkins who was working for Marvel in the late 60s. Prior to that, he had been an assistant to Wally Wood in New York.
Okay.
Wally Wood, famous Mad Magazine and EC Comics artist.
Right, right.
He was living there with his family, with his wife and young child. I think after being, this is late 60s, you know, very late 60s, like 68, 69, maybe even into 1970. After being mugged for about the third time, and the last time this thief actually held a knife up to his neck, he decided maybe it's time to leave New York behind and go back to my hometown of East Liverpool, Ohio. So he enlisted some family members' help, and that's exactly what they did. They loaded up the truck, and they moved to Ohio. And in the time period, Stan Lee would joke about comics being done in the wilds of Ohio because Dan Adkins was getting a little lonely out there.
Mm-hmm.
Through a number of circumstances, Craig Russell's father heard about him
mm-hmm.
and told him, my son is a nut for Marvel Comics and he likes to draw. Could he come see you? So Craig Russell, P. Craig Russell, became his first protege
while
he was still in college.
This
is like 1972 possibly.
Okay.
That was soon followed by Val Merrick, who went to the same college I did, Youngstown State, who started with Dan Adkins, also in 1972, and then Paul Galassi, the original artist on Master of Kung Fu,
mm-hmm.
who starred with Adkins around the same time period, maybe as late as 1973. The deal was, in those years, Stan Lee had been kicked upstairs to, you know, the head of Marvel Comics, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, his mandate was to expand the line, so they needed people to draw.
Mm-hmm.
All those three guys broke in within like a week. 2 weeks.
Wow.
Just a few years later, it could take 2 to 5 years, but, you know, they were in the right place at the right time.
Yep.
Val Merrick is working with Dan Adkins. You know, it's very fortuitous. He was graduating from Youngstown State, and he had no idea what he was going to do with his art degree from Youngstown State, which he later said he figured was kind of worthless.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in a class talking about comic books with a friend, and there's a woman in the class. Are you two guys into comics? And he said, they said, yes. He said, well, you know, I live in East Liverpool, Ohio. That was like 30 miles south of Youngstown. And I know Dan Atkinson. He works for Marvel Comics. Maybe you'd like to meet him. So one thing led to another, and yeah, that summer Dan said to Val Merrick, hey, would you like to come to the big New York comic book convention put on by Phil Suling? Val had no idea. He thought it would be a bunch of artists sitting in a room talking about pinpoints. But here he's sitting behind a table with Dan Atkins, and he's autographing 30, 40
issues
Marvel comics.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, a lot of things in life, I think, are kind of flukes. They just happen.
I mean, right place, right time.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Getting your work seen.
It's
that's the most important thing.
Well, Bruce, do you have like any websites or anything you want to plug or social media?
Anybody is free to go and check out my Facebook page.
Okay.
It's my name, Bruce Chrislip, and I post artwork of my own and talented friends. And I, you know, I've been at this basically since the age of five, but I've been at this being published since the early 1970s. I started, like a lot of people did back then, in comic book fanzines. Some of these were mimeographed. Some of these were, what was the height of printing back then, photo offset printing. And, you know, many of the people that got work in Marvel, DC, and even Charlton Comics in the 70s started in the fanzine. In fact, a huge number of them. You know, now I was never into drawing superhero material so much. I liked humor. So that's why I drifted more towards underground comics and other things like that, you know. You know, my fans, are, my idols are people like Wally Wood, Jack Davis, Mort Drucker. Well, later Robert Crumb, I liked. Gilbert Shelton, I think, I think, who is underrated, one of the greatest cartoonists ever. You know, some people might say, well, okay, he did that Furry Freak Brothers, and that's just like Cheech and Chong over again. But no, he, the man could draw anything and draw well. His drafting skills are phenomenal, and he understood how to craft a well-told humor, you know, really funny story. So much of his work still holds up, I feel. You know, so let's hear it for Gilbert Shelton.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much for sitting down with me. I really do appreciate it. It was fun.
All right.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversations at CXC with some of the great creators that were showcasing their artwork and their projects at CXC. And I encourage you, if you like what you heard, check out these creators. Check them out on their websites or through their social media. And if you like what you see, buy something, because it helps them out and allows them to pursue their dreams. And you're going to get a cool story and a cool comic. I guarantee it. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have questions about this episode or any episode for that matter. First of all, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can leave me a message if you like over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for at PVDcast. And if you want to maybe be old school about it, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Now, maybe you have a friend that you want to recommend this podcast to. Well, tell them that there's a lot of different places where they can hear the PVDcast. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and it's the best place to get all of the latest episodes. It's also available through all of those other major podcasting outlets, you know, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, Deezer, etc., etc. All you have to do is put in the search bar of your favorite podcasting app, PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you're using one of those podcasting outlets or apps, please rate and review. Give me a rating, whatever you think I deserve. Give me a review. It can be just a couple of words, and it helps me out tremendously. So I need the help. It pushes me up in the charts. And, you know, that's very important to not only me, but these podcasting outlets as well. And you know what? While you're at it, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. Now, there's two more ways that you can catch this great podcast. First of all, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the latest episode through the Facebook page. I do a little broadcast every Wednesday night. And then lastly, you can hear the PVD Cast through CROC Radio, Croc Radio. It's a great internet radio station out of Kimberley, British Columbia. They have a lot of great shows. You should check those out as well as the PVD Cast. Saturday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the PVD Cast is aired through Croc Radio. And I'm going to get on out of here, and I want to thank each and every one of you for checking out the episode once again. With that being said, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2023.